Here we go.
All right. Mukama karati vachalam pangan bang kayate grim yakitam bande shigurum tinitainam Omakyana timlandasya karanjara shalakaya chakshumritam yena tasamai shigurave namaha. So I had two requests today about what I should speak about. One request was how I got my Giriraj, and the other one was about my experiences with Srila Prabhupada when Srila Prabhupada was here. So I'll speak about my Giriraj, and then he'll help me to please mercy. I can speak about Srila Prabhupada. I was in Mayapur last year, and I had a whole tour planned for America. But as it so happened, I had to cancel because of health. So it was very unexpected. I was in Mayapur. And so I was feeling a bit lonely. All my deities were in Vrindavan. And I had just taken this course in Vaishnava relationships. And it was also mixed up a lot with modern psychology and they were telling us you have to identify your feelings. I think it was like Braj Leela's teaching, this nonviolent communication. So they said, okay, you have to identify what are your feelings. So at that point, I was feeling lonely. I was trying to identify after the course was finished. And then it said, and behind all your feelings there is a need. So there's a whole list of needs, you know, like love, this, that. But it wasn't on my list. It's actually, I said, well, I need Krishna. So then the next day, Giriraj came. I said, okay. And I wasn't, because I was thinking, yeah, I need Krishna, but you know, he's on the altar, I know that, but I need him to be with me, you know, all the time. And like, so that, you know, when he came, and the way he came also was also mysterious. My friend Krota Shami, she was in Mayapur the next day, and I went to say goodbye to her, and she had this Giriraj, and she said, this one Prabhu gave me, and he said this Giriraj wanted to come with me. He told me, my Giriraj wants to go with you. So she said, okay. She said, but I don't know how to worship him, and I don't know what I'm going to do with him. And he told me, all you have to do is give some water and a leaf, tulsi. And I said, yeah, that's okay if you're in the dump, but if you're going to Los Angeles, I think you have to do a lot more. And she said, yeah, I don't think I can do it. So I said, okay, I'll take him back to Vrindavan and put him on Govardhan. But of course, after I had him in my hands, then I said, wait a minute, this is the answer to my prayer. And I got very attached, and then he stayed with me. And ever since that time, my personality has undergone a drastic change. And before I was like very, very shy, you know, and kind of timid and not very brave. Since I got this Giriraj, I'm like fearless, you know. It's like he wants to be the center of attention, you know, and so I have to follow him wherever he wants to go. Like this year in Kartik, after Kartik it was, we have our BIAT Yatra retreat, and with Sachinanda Swami in Burija. So about 5 days before the retreat, and Sachinanda Swami had an emergency and he had to go for operation. And they asked me, well, can you fill in for Sachinanda Swami? I said, oh my God. But then I said, all right, no problem. And I realized that he wanted to be the center of attention because I put him on my desk when I speak. So I told Burija, and I said, I think my Giriraj just wanted to be the center. And Burija said, well, we could have arranged it for him to be the center, you know, even though I keep Sachinanda Swami too. Anyway, so that's one thing that happened. A lot of things happened with him. But now I will again speak about Srila Prabhupada. And my first, of course, experience with Srila Prabhupada was the day I joined the temple. And in the early days, becoming a devotee meant you had to go and live in the temple. Yeah.
May I have to request?
Okay.
Did you kind of start back when you first met devotees and then you left to meet Srila Prabhupada?
Okay. Well, That was, I was in Boston in 1970 with my husband. We were living like hippies, and which means no money, or practically no money. And I was a musician myself. We were actually both musicians. So I was searching for groove because I had been reading many books, and I knew I had to have a groove. So I was trying out many different grooves. There were a lot in those days. Sai Baba Ram Dass and Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. And so many gurus were there in Boston. So I was trying them all out, and it wasn't working. One gave me the secret mantra for $35. And said, you'll become, she said, you'll become liberated in 6 months, and maybe even God. So I tried it, you know, but it didn't work. I wasn't liberated. And I didn't become God either. So, well, okay, so much for that one. But anyway, so then my husband met the devotees first. He was on the street, and Jadarmani came with a pamphlet entitled, Who is Crazy? Because everybody thought the devotees were crazy. But Prabhupada wrote a pamphlet saying, everybody but the devotees are crazy. So that was my first pamphlet. But how he got it, Jadarani, they used to have these conch shells. And you put the money in the conch shell. And they would stick the conch shell in your belly and say, you can give a donation. So my husband met Jadarani on the street. She had this conch shell and this book. And he saw the price. Oh, 50 cents. Okay, I got her. I only have a quarter. So he said, see, all I have is 25 cents. That's all he had. He said, no problem. You can have the book. And then he had to walk home. It was his bus fare to get home. And we were very poor. And so that was our, then we got our first book. And then we hitched a ride to the temple. And the first day we were, I said, so what is your process? And they said, you have to chant, you have to dance, and you have to eat prasadam. I said, okay, I'll try it. So I was chanting, dancing, and eating. It was quite nice. And from the first time I heard the holy name, then that I never went out of my mind. It was always there. And I was a musician, so when I heard that spiritual sound, I said, this is the perfect sound. I never heard a sound like this before. Because I was trained to hear. As a musician, you're trained to hear very nicely. And then the books, I also was like, I went from the age of 7, 8, I was reading this many books from the library every week. And my goal was to read the whole library. And then I got Prabhupada's books, and that was the end of my literary career. I have to keep reading this one again and again because I can't figure it out. What I could figure out said, oh, this agrees with my philosophy. I like this. So I was reading the books, and Boston was an amazing temple because the president was Satsarup, Das at that time. He was Adhikari. Giriraj Maharaj was Brahmachari. He was our Sankirtan leader for Harinam. And the temple commander was Vidyananda Maharaj. And Jyotis Swami was in charge of the press. All of these people were there, and all the artists were there, and Bhagaraj Rukmini, all the artists. Rukmini was the pujari. Jyotis Dharma Maharaj was there. Prabhupada Swami joined there. It was amazing devotees. So then what happened, I was going to the temple. My husband wasn't so interested. So I was going, and then one weekend came. They said, oh, Prabhupada is coming. So you must stay for the weekend in the temple. That was about 5 months after I first met the devotees. I said, okay. So the night before, we had to paint the whole temple. That was the ritual. Wherever Prabhupada would go, you had to, because, you know, it must be fresh because he's a pure devotee. So you have to make everything new. Instead of a new house, you paint everything fresh. So we had to stay up all night painting. And then next day, instead of coming, he sent 4 sannyasis. And one of them was Rishi Jamaraj. And he led us on Harinam day and night. So after I stayed the weekend, I said, I'm so happy here. Why should I go back? So I went and I said goodbye to my husband. And I said, okay, I'm becoming a devotee. Goodbye. Because in those days, you couldn't be a devotee at home. You had to join the temple. That's the only way you could be a devotee. There was no outside, no such thing as devotee outside. There was no outside, only inside. So then after 2 months, my husband also joined because his philosophy was, he was a hippie and he really believed in it. He said, I won't work. And I was working a little bit and getting some money. So when I left, his source of income was finished. So he also had to join so he could follow his philosophy of not working. He became a devotee also. And so we both became devotees. And then after 6 months in that temple, Satchit Maharaj says, I'm sending you to Florida. This is from Boston to Florida. So how did he send us? He put us out on the road and we had to hitchhike. That was how he was sending us. I'm sending you to Florida. They took us up to the tollway, put us on the road, and we were dressed in yellow sheets because in those days nobody had saris and dhotis. We just would go and buy, you know, 6 yards of yellow or saffron. If you were a brahmachari or brahmacharini, lady or man, you would wear saffron sheets. And if you were married, you would wear yellow sheets. So we were wearing yellow sheets, and we were out on the road hitchhiking. And we didn't have suitcases. We had a few boxes with our belongings. And somebody actually picked us up and took us to New York, and then we could collect and got our fare to Florida. And then after 6 months, the standard was after 6 months you get initiation. So after 6 months I asked for initiation and they said, well, you should wait for your husband 2 more months. I said, okay. I waited 2 more months. I said to my husband, okay, let's get initiated. He says, I'm not ready. I said, okay, I'm not waiting any longer. I'm getting initiated. And so I got recommendation and then I wrote a letter. Those days, Prabhupada was in India, so we would get initiated by mail. I didn't bring my beads, but I still had my original beads. We didn't have tulsi. I had to go to the shop and buy the beads. I had to make them myself and string them myself. And you would chant the mantra on each bead as you strung it. And then you would mail your beads to Prabhupada in India along with a letter. And I wrote a letter to Prabhupada saying, if you don't initiate me, I will die. And I quoted Srimad Bhagavatam from the second canto. If you don't get the dust of a lotus feet of a pure devotee on your head, you're a dead body. So I wrote that, and he accepted me, and he sent me a return letter with my beads. He chanted on my beads. And he said in my initiation letter, your first father, your material father is your first father, and the real father, second father, is your spiritual master. And now your path is open to go back to Godhead. And he gave me 6 instructions in that letter. And 5 of them I've been able to follow up to this day, and the 6th one is yet to come, but someday. So the first 5, chant at least 16 rounds. So you can follow the 4 regulative principles and go on Sankirtan, Harinam, and preach, deity worship, and then read and study all my books. So for 7 years I was in India, Pujari, Radha Govinda temple. I was Radha Govinda Pujari for 7 years when I was here. And then for 7 years I was doing traveling, book distribution in Bombay, Gujarat, Maharashtra, Rajasthan, in India for another 7 years. Then I was a mother for 7 years, which wasn't part, but anyway. And then the last 16 years I'm in Vrindavan teaching, reading and studying and teaching his books. So then the 6th instruction was 24 hours be engaged. So that one is still yet to come. Huh? You think? Well, sometimes at night I don't do service. Sometimes I do, though. Sometimes I do. Somebody on the Sunday feast, one Indian man walked up to me, I don't know his name, and he said, I had a dream about you a few days ago. I said, really? He said, yes. You were driving Srila Prabhupada to my house for a program. I said, really? He said, yes, you were driving the car, and Prabhupada was asking, is this the place? And he had a big program, and he had Prabhupada there. So I said, well, I don't know what I do at night when I'm sleeping. So I'm not responsible. I don't know what I do. Because I don't remember this. But I remember my bad dreams. So, but anyway. Yeah. And so then those 6 instructions. But I think that there comes a time in your life when you actually do bhajan, and you're like, 24 hours more, like day and night. So I still need my sleep. I really need to sleep 6 or 7 hours now. So when I was pujari, only 4 hours I was sleeping. 20 hours service when I was pujari, because the day was short in pujari, so I had to do most of it. Yeah. Calcutta. Calcutta. Yeah. So I was doing Mangal Arati, waking them up, Mangal Arati, dressing, and the flowers, and taking care of Tulsi, and 12 o'clock Arati, 4 o'clock Arati, 7 o'clock Arati, dressing, putting them to sleep. And we had a very opulent flowers. I had one man bringing me 50 garlands every day. And that was also for Jagannath. We had mogra, jasmine, gardenia, rose, everything we had. And 4 kinds of champa. And Srila Prabhupada, he liked the deity worship, especially the flowers. And there was a back window off the deity room, and the bees used to come in. And Radha Shamsan, Radha Govinda's side, there were these big, huge bumblebees. One or two would come. They would stay on Radha Govinda's side. And on Jagannath's side, small, small, little bees, they would come and sit on the garlands. Those bees are still there. I was in Calcutta, and they came in Prabhupada's garland. Because now it's closed behind the deities. But Prabhupada was sitting out in the veranda, and these little bees came. And that's how it is in Vaikuntha. It says the little bees are sitting on the garlands in Vaikuntha. So when I saw that, because we had third canto, was the description of Vaikuntha for Jagannath. And the bumblebees are in for Radha and Govinda. It's Radharani and the bumblebee. So Srila Prabhupada said, if the bees come, that means the deities are pleased with your worship. So we had bees every day. And so let's see. I saw him first in Florida, I think before I was initiated, in Gainesville. And that's in Prabhupada Namrita, this remote corner of the world. That was that famous lecture. And when I first saw him, it was at the airport. And I was just walking behind him. And I felt very protected and very safe and very secure. And I said, I can do this the rest of my life. I can follow him the rest of my life like this. So then, when I went to India in 1972, Srila Prabhupada was in India, and he asked for 50 devotees to come. So from every temple, they chose 2-3 devotees. And we were in Dallas, so they chose my husband and I and Bhagavat, another devotee, to go to India. Sanjeev said, he was there, he said, I'm sending you to India. And we said, uh-oh. No, guys. But anyway, we had to get to New York. We had to check. Once we got to New York, they let us collect our ticket to India. And we got it in 3 weeks. We were selling pamphlets for 25 cents. And $300 one-way ticket. We took one-way tickets because Prabhupada told us to go, but he didn't tell us to go back. So we just stayed in India. Still in India. And very austere. When we arrived in Bombay, the devotees were living on the land, literally, and the deities were in the tent. Remember how Harish put his raincoat over the deities to protect them from the rain? And then the men were living in a hut, which was the prasadam room, the kitchen, the everything in one. The ladies were on the roof of a building, and it was summer. We were just living on the roof. That's where Lady's ashram was. Shaka was up there. Yadubara was in the men's, with the men. My husband was with the men. And the prasadam room was in there. And it was very austere. And there were these huge rats running across. And I was watching him. And I was thinking, I hope he doesn't fall on my plate. And he fell in Pancha Devita's plate. And that was my first day.
First day.
It's like first day in India, yeah. And then you hit through the drinking water, they have this clay pot, and we didn't have this lorry or anything. No, bottled water in India. So you take off the lid, and all these mosquitoes would fly out. So all of us were, it just took a few days for you to get really sick. I got urine infection, and everybody was sick because there was no drinking water, proper drinking water. And we did have milk in Bombay, but you had to pick out all the insects from your milk. It's really a difficult time. And then we were so sick, they just said, okay, we sent you to Calcutta to be the pujaris. And Calcutta was a little bit better because, we didn't have much water or electricity, but at least I had a roof over my head. So I was happy for that. Then I go, oh, finally, I got a roof over my head. It's enough culture shock, you know, to be in India and then to live like that was another shock. But we never thought about going back. We just thought, you know, Prabhupada sent us here. We'll see. But most of us went back. Most of them went back. Out of 25 that went, 5 stayed. Out of the first 25, our group was 25, and then 5 stayed. So then Calcutta was where I had, I saw Srila Prabhupada the most, because he would go stopping Calcutta on his way to Mayapur, and then Mayapur on his way back, he would stop in Calcutta. So but first, I had personal association in Vrindavan in 1972. He was giving Nectar of Devotion lectures in Radha Damodar Temple. And we were living in Keshiga, which was also another, everything was austere, you couldn't avoid it. Again, it was like a slum. And it was like the ruins, we were living in the ruins of an ancient building. But it was quite nice, the Jamuna was flowing right next to it, still does. But that time it was very deep. So Vishaka and I, we preferred to just jump in the Jamuna, although we couldn't touch the bottom, rather than have a shower in the so-called shower room, which was just a room with one light bulb and all these spider webs and slimy walls, and if the lights went out, then, you know, you didn't want to be there. So we just said, okay, we'll go in the dark and, you know, jump in the Jamuna and whatever. Better we die in the Jamuna than go in that bathroom. And then, of course, the latrine was up on the second floor, and he had a well where you had to get a bucket and pull the water up and run up to the second. Of course, I had dysentery. And I was on the first floor, so down, get the bucket, run up to the second floor, which was a hole practically in the floor. That wasn't very happy either. But we did everything because we wanted to be with Prabhupada. And we were walking every day in Vrindavan, of course, in 72. It was quite different from what it is now. Raman Reti was like a forest. It was a jungle. We call it jungle in India, but it's a forest. A lot of trees. And there were no buildings all the way up to where they sell sabji. And there was nothing, no Phubha ashram, none of those ashrams, no loudspeakers. Only Bihari was there, but he didn't have a shop. He had a little table and he was selling lemon juice or something. He was there. The peacocks were dancing in the main road. There was nothing with a motor, no cars, no buses. If you want to go to Mathura, you have to take the horse carriage. And I remember I was really sick again. I had fever and dysentery. And going back to Calcutta, I was just at the feet of the boys were sitting, and I was just lying on like at the feet. And then we went reserved on the train, and I got separated from the rest of the devotees. And unreserved means you don't have a seat. So I counted, you know, in a place where 6 people, there were 27 people in my seat. I was on the floor, of course. But then there was a luggage rack, and I got in there after some hours. I got up there. I was so sick. I didn't have any money. I had no money, and I was just in there. Anyway, but in Vrindavan, it was also the rickshaw. There was a few rickshaws. Oh, it was expensive for us. They were 1 rupee. We didn't have 1 rupee. So then Prabhupada was lecturing morning in Srimad Bhagavatam, evening in Nectar Devotion. I had one. So that was where in Vrindavan and Mayapur, he said something to me which I never understood at that time, but which his words came true now 30 years later, what he said. So in Vrindavan he said to me, just like he would have darshan in his room after the class, and he said, my sister tells me you speak Bhagavatam very nicely. So when he said that, I was completely puzzled because I never spoke Bhagavatam to speak of nicely. And so I was trying to think, what does she mean? Then I remembered in Jamashtami, we had the ritual, the habit, the practice was morning to night you have to read Krishna book. And everybody would take turns. We only had 10 devotees. So my turn came, and I had to read for 2 hours. And I was reading Rasa Lila last time. And my sister was sitting in front of me. And she didn't understand a word of English. And I was reading in English. She only knew Bengali. So then, after the part, Krishna leaves the gopis, and the gopis are crying. And then she started crying. I didn't understand what she understood everything. then there was no language barrier there, you know. She just understood. And then she told Prabhupada, oh, she speaks Bhagavatam. That was a Krishna book reading. But then, 30 years later, I started speaking Bhagavatam, and I just realized that it just struck me one day when I was in the middle of Bhagavatam. I was speaking Bhagavatam, and I said, oh, Prabhupada's word came true. It was very indirect, he said, but it came true. And then the same thing happened in Manipur with a different service that I'm also doing now. I'll tell you, when I was first joined the temple, this was in Boston, I was a typist, so not only we were going out Harinam 10 in the morning to 10 at night, then the composing machine, typesetting machine was going 24 hours a day, so I was on that shift also because I knew how to type. So the first day I walked in, then Pradyumna said to me, okay, so you have to learn how to read Sanskrit because we're doing Bhagavad Gita and you have to transliterate Sanskrit to English when you type. I said, okay, he gave me Bhagavad Gita. I learned how to read the Sanskrit to English. Then I would read in Sanskrit and then I have to type in English. So then Pradyumna, he saw me in Calcutta. He said, oh, you want to go with Srila Prabhupada to Mayapur? I was in Jari there. I said, yeah, I want to go. So he said, okay. Prabhupada is translating Chaitanya Charitamrita, so you have to learn to read Bengali. We're leaving tomorrow. I said, okay, no problem. I'm coming. Because Prabhupada said impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. So, he gave me the Bengali book. I learned a couple hours to read in my spare time out of the 20 hours. And then I was off the next day with Srila Prabhupada to Mayapur. And again, austerity is there. We were living in the Lotus building, which was not at all a lotus. It was a construction site. Prabhupada was also living in the construction site. And it was, they were still building it while we were living in it. And there were bathrooms, but there was no water in the bathrooms. We had to go down to the pump on the ground level, outside. And then there were a place for windows, but there were no windows. There's just holes in the wall. And there were doors, but they had no handles, so you couldn't really close them. If a huge wind came, they would just open. And our room, we had a floor, but we had no door. So we had to get out of our room, we had to go across the next room, which had a door, but had no floor. So to get across to the door, we had to walk this narrow plank to get to the door. So anyway, that was how we were living. And I was talking to this really ancient typewriter, not electric. There was some of the electricity. So Prabhupada, one time he saw me typing, and I was sitting with this big, huge Bengali Chaitanya Charitamrita open, and I had the headphones. I was listening. Prabhupada was dictating in Bengali, and then I would read the verse in Bengali, and I would type it in English like that. So, and he would do the synonym, so I'd have to hear him speak in Bengali, read it in Bengali, and type it in English. And then he would do the translation and everything in English. So one day he saw me. He was walking by on the veranda and looked in my window. He said, oh, you know Bengali? I said, yes, no problem. Although I just learned to read a few days ago. He said, very good editor, come to my room. I said, uh-oh. I went to his room, he said, you know Bengali? Yes, no problem. Fortunately, he didn't speak to me in Bengali. But he said, okay, so you learn how to type in Bengali, and we will do many books together. So then, I had visions. Oh, I'm going to travel with Prabhupada. But it never happened because in Calcutta, meanwhile, while I was away, a new president was going to come. His name was Gauranga Muni. And he had a reputation. And all the pujaris were afraid of him, and so they all left. And so I had to go back and be the pujari in Calcutta. But when he said those words came true, I started writing books a few years ago, again, like 30 years later. His words came true. And I'm writing books with him, of course, as he's my inspiration. And so one thing happened also. This brahmachari was teaching me to type in Bengali. So I was typing in Bengali, and I said, see, you can look at the paper, and you don't have to look at the key. So I was teaching him how to touch type in Bengali. He said, oh, now I understand what Prabhupada told me. I said, what did he tell you? said, Prabhupada said, you teach her and you learn from her. I was teaching rather early in my career. So then, mostly I would have association with Srila Prabhupada when he would come to Calcutta. He would come into the deity worship. One time I was doing Mangalarti, and in the Calcutta, now it's different. That time there was practically no separation between the temple room and the deities. It was the same, it's the same level. And there was just a chain, a thin chain between the deities and the devotees. So one day I was doing Mangalarti, I turned around to offer the gila, and there was Prabhupada standing right behind me. So I really got a shock, and I thought, should I just give it to him, or should I go to a puja? What should I do? And so I did both. I think I went, what to do? So then, the whole arti, he was standing right behind me. I was really nervous, and I was concentrating, really trying to concentrate to do that arti. And then, later on, I thought, well, I should do all my service like that, like Prabhupada just watching me like that, right behind me, watching me. That was one experience. Another time, sometimes he would chastise us, sometimes he would praise us. So when he would chastise, like one time, the ghee lamp, they had these huge ghee lamps full of ghee because the lights were always going out. And so, you know, it's a trip to keep them clean. So one time, he said, why is this ghee lamp dirty? Who has done this? And I thought he should have said, who has not done this? So we get called up. And you feel like, you know, looking for a place to hide, but there's no place, you know, and you have to take it. And then other times, he would praise us, like he really loved the flowers. And almost every time he would give a lecture, when you come to Calcutta, he would talk about the deity worship. And one time he started the lecture, Shiva Grahara Tananityanana, and he said, this deity worship is under the direction of Radharani, and so you are working under her direction. And then one time we did, after Sringarachi, he was sitting in the Vyasasan, surrounded by about 10 sannyasis on the way to Mayapur. And he called us up, because he really loved the deities. And he offered obeisances, my husband and I, and he said, thank you very much. And then, when we were offering obeisances, one sannyasi told us afterwards, Prabhupada said to us, be blessed. So he gave us the blessing. And I understood that, okay, we got a blessing one day, but the next day we have to earn it again. It's not like, okay, now we're finished. We don't, you know, retire from our devotional service. No, now we have to do it again the next day. So that was another thing happened. When I was out for businesses, I was like in bags, because our temple president was sannyasi, and he didn't think we need, you know, good clothes and things. And I didn't even have shoes. I had some shoes and somebody stole them. He said, you don't need shoes. You're the pujari. You don't go out of the temple. So I had no shoes. In Calcutta, you want to have shoes. But, so then I was trying to hide all the holes, you know, because I knew Prabhupada wouldn't like it. But then, funny enough, after 4 days, I think he saw it, because one of the richest people in Calcutta came to me and said, oh, I'm taking you to all the sari shops in Calcutta and buying you saris. And ever since that time, I have so many saris. People always give me saris. I never have a problem. And I think it was Prabhupada who did that, who saw that. And now my whole life, I have this opulence of people giving me saris. One time in Calcutta, a sari shop owner came and took me to his shop and said, 20 saris, take 20 saris. I said, okay. And at that time in Calcutta, this Lakshmi Moni was there with all her girls. So I thought, okay. And I gave them 15 and I kept 5 for her girls. So that was good. And then Krishna provides. Then one more. I would just like to say how my experience after Prabhupada left. Because I did have experience how he is still personally guiding me. When I was in Vrindavan in 1994, I was, at that point, I did not know what my next service would be. So I was praying, what shall I do? What is my next service? And I said, in the meantime, I'll just read, because I like to read the books. And I was reading. And after 3 months, I understood, oh, I have to teach. I should not only I should read, I should share what I read. And then I got so many different signs. The devotees were encouraging me, and different signs I was getting. I should teach. So then I really wanted Prabhupada to give me his confirmation. So one time I was really feeling separation from Prabhupada, and so I went in the samadhi, and there was a tape of Prabhupada saying, and Prabhupada said in the tape as I walked in, "You think this jati is made of stone?" I looked at him and said, "No, Prabhupada, you're not made of stone. Do you think the acharyas are so foolish that they're going to worship stone?" I said, "No, Prabhupada, you're here, I believe it. But I need some more personal instruction, some specific thing." So then I got the inspiration, okay, I'll go to his house, because every day they have a letter on his desk, and you change it. And I said, "Let me see if there's something in that letter for me." And I went there, I said, "Oh, yes." And I found personal instruction in that letter. And the letter said, "Now you are one of my senior disciples. I'm depending on you to carry on this movement. You have learned Krishna consciousness, and I want you, now you should teach it purely for others' benefit." So I said, "Okay, I'm going to teach." And that time in Vrindavan, even now the ladies, they don't speak, they don't give Bhagavatam class. But that time, there were also VIG, there was no ladies too, it was all men. And about Shastri, everything. So I said, "Oh, I'm supposed to teach, how am I going to teach? There's no facility." So what I did, I just started teaching in my room. So for 3 years, I was teaching Bhagavad Gita, I was teaching Bhajan, I was teaching in my room. I had a whole course going in whatever room, wherever I was. And then after 3 years, then they asked me to start teaching in the IG, women's, they opened the women's Bhakti Shastri. So I understood, you know, if there's no facility, you just have to get a facility. There's no excuse, I have no facility. Just do it, you know. She gave you an order, so okay, just whatever you have, I have a room. Even there, they didn't let me, because I was in somebody's house, I was for 2 years. So for the first year, they were giving me trouble, not the people, but the workers who live in the house, they think they own the house, not the owner. So when the owner's gone, then the workers own the house, and you're just, you know, a guest. I remember because they would close the door, they wouldn't open it for me to go to Mangalarti. I used to climb the wall sometimes, the gate, the fence, which was, you know, pretty a bit high, with my son to go to Mangalarti. Oh no, he wasn't there. He was in Gurukul. But anyway, yeah. So then I got Shesha's house after 1 year. So then I was teaching there for 2 years in his house until I started teaching in VIG. But yeah, so I understood that you can have Prabhupada's association even after his physical. I'm sure you are experiencing that with your spiritual master as well. That you can still have his association. I feel very strongly his presence here. And Prabhupada's presence, too. I feel Prabhupada's presence here also. Very strongly. So, I'll stop here. Any questions? Or anything? Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I'm just curious. Your husband, where is he?
Oh, yeah, he's in India. We're separated. In 1993, well, we had the son. And then after 5 years, he decided to get married again. We're not divorced. But he just decided to get married because he's too cheap. He didn't want to pay for a divorce. But we're good friends now. We're still that marriage. Our marriage lasted 24 years, and that marriage lasted 3 years. But an interesting thing that happened from that marriage is he had a daughter, and that daughter, when at the age of 10, she just left her father. The mother she didn't like at all. She left her father to come stay with me. She wanted to be a devotee. So, my husband, he's a devotee. Yeah, he's in shape with Prabhupada. But, you know, he wasn't living in the temple or near a temple. I mean, he was living here, but... Yeah, he was, actually, but it wasn't a good situation for her. And she loved Vrindavan, so I said, okay, you can come and stay with me and my son. But she left me at the age of 11 to go and stay at Mayapur Gurukul. She's there now, 15 years old, in Mayapur Gurukul. But we're friends. We're good friends now. It's easier now. The way we were married at a distance is quite easier. You might know his name is Purnaprajna, and he's written many books, a summary of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ramayana, Mahabharata. These books are he has written. And a lot of books from Rasa Bihari, like Garga Samhita, and the Shinga Purana, Garuda Purana, a lot of these books. That's what he does now. He writes and edits books. They were both writers. Yes.
Thank you very much for the inspiring message. It truly is inspiring when you really go into detail about the quality of physical life that you experienced in the early days and the foundation that you laid for us. Thank you very much. My question is, will you be teaching in the next Jhajjar retreat?
I will not be teaching. It will be Sachinandan Swami and Harijan Prabhu will be teaching. It was an emergency last year. I just stepped in for him. So, I did it. I just, like, on short notice, I did it. Because I did have some experience here with Prushyukta and Divyambar. I did about 7 workshops and retreats with them before. 2 years ago, I did that.
Yeah, that's how I first heard about you from Divyambar.
Right.
Yeah. And she was hoping that you would join them as a regular teacher.
Right.
And I was hoping that you would.
Yeah. Somehow it didn't happen, and now I'm doing my own seminars, freelance. I'm instead of just japa, I do all the 5 most potent forms of devotional service. 1 class for japa, 1 class for plus books, and 1 class for deity worship, 1 class for association with Srila Prabhupada, and 1 class for entering Vrindavan. And so, I like to enrich the devotees. I think there's a lot of japa going on now, so I thought I would do something new. I'll do something new, and maybe I'll just... I think now I'm going to concentrate more on Bhagavatam, because that's what I've been doing for the last 6-8 years, is teaching Bhagavatam. So next time I'll be teaching. I would like to do Queen Kunti's prayers maybe next time.
I see. Now, are you teaching the Bhakti Shastra class in Mayapur for women?
Because at that time I'll be teaching in Vrindavan. There's Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhav, and Bhakti Vedanta. So, Burishan Prabhu and I were pioneering the Bhakti Vedanta course, which is the 3rd level. I'll be teaching that in Vrindavan in December, in the same time they did their Bhakti Shastri. So I'll be doing, we have 2 more years to finish that course. So we're finishing 10th canto this year. Then this year we'll do 11 and 12. So I'll be busy in Vrindavan. And then my plan is to go to Mayapur for 2 months, then Europe for 2.5-3 months, and then back here next year, August and September, I plan to be back in America. And certainly back to Washington for some time. Sometime. But I'm getting inspiration from Gornitai to teach Bhagavatam next time. And I'll do again this. I would like to do the seminar in Gitanagari that I did in Washington of the 5 most potent forms of devotional service. I'll see if it happens. I don't know. I'll have to find out if that will happen or not. So that's my plan. If Krishna allows, next year's plan.
It's so inspiring to hear about your the level of your dedication to Srila Prabhupada, and also the level of surrender.
Everybody was like that. It wasn't just me. We were everybody.
Yeah, it was such a sphere environment. You must have such deep love for him.
Well, whatever we were doing, he was more austere. We couldn't compare to him. I know, I was on the floor for 18 years until I got pregnant. In 5 months, I couldn't get up off the floor. So then we found one broken bed with 3 legs and put bricks under the 3rd. And that was my bed after But it was nice on the floor, you know. I mean, we were young and we said, oh, it's an adventure. You know, we weren't suffering except for the disease we were suffering. High fevers, but other than that, it was kind of fun. I was happy. I was so happy in Calcutta. I felt like I was in spiritual world because I was with Radha Govinda the whole day and night. And I said, wow, this is Goloka. I was so happy that I didn't care anything, whatever. And Prabhupada, you know, sometimes we would walk with him on the beach, went for morning walks sometimes. And I was always trying to figure out Prabhupada because I have this very active intelligence. So I was always trying to figure out, how does he walk so fast? He's over 70 and we are 20s and we can't keep up with him, you know. It was beyond your intelligence. You couldn't figure out. And sometimes in Calcutta, I was just watching so carefully during the class, and I was trying to figure out, is he here or is he somewhere else? Where is he? You know, is he in this world? Or it didn't look like he was in the world. He looked kind of like a projection on the wall. It just didn't look like he was of this world at all. And I was always trying to figure out, you know, where is he? I mean, where is he now? My crazy active intelligence was like that. So that was Prabhupada. He's very much with us. He's still with us now, very much with us. If we follow his instructions. That's him. It's not different from him. And that's our connection. Our connection with the Parampara is the instructions. That's what's coming down from Krishna. That's the mercy, the instructions. And then when we do that service, it goes back up. And then the mercy comes back down again. And so it's always good to keep that line of mercy open by following the instructions. If you follow, then you get that mercy. And your life just becomes like miracles. Since I got Giriraj, that was one miracle, first miracle, and then I don't even, I used to worry about, oh, I have to do this, I have to do that, and I have to go here and there, but now it's become very simple somehow. Yeah, I just leave it to him and to Srila Prabhupada, and then my life is there. My life is going on.
How many countries do you visit in Europe?
Well, previously I used to go to Radadesh and also Russia, Ukraine. This time I only went to Ireland and Sweden and Denmark. But next year I think I will also go to London and maybe some of the Eastern European countries. Next time. I'll just have to see how the schedule goes. I will definitely... The places I went this year now want me to spend more time. So I'm more inclined to spend more time in one place than to go to so many places. Because it's harder for me to keep traveling like that. 1 or 2 weeks is actually really good. Then I can get a little bit... My body can catch up. Otherwise, it's too... I can't catch up with where I am or who I am or where I, you know, what I'm doing. Two years ago, it was like really fast. And I remember one time I went to the airport here in Washington at 4 a.m. and the guy asked me, where are you going? And I said, I don't know. I know it's the West Coast, but I couldn't figure out which city we're in. I knew I was going to end up in Santa Barbara, but they were supposed to stop somewhere in between. That whole day was like, the plane was canceled, and I had to get on another plane, and then I had, like, it was getting shorter and shorter, my time between catching the next plane in San Francisco. And we come in for the landing, and we abort the landing, we go take off again. And there was a plane in the runway. We aborted the landing. Yeah, Krishna, that was the trip that day. Yeah, we came in, I was seeing, oh, we're going to land. And then, nope, we take off. So I had 20 minutes. Still, I had 20 minutes. I caught my flight, but it was a bit nerve-wracking. Now this time I have phone numbers, I have, you know, addresses, I have a cell phone, so I'm much more prepared, and I have a little pocket here with my passport and my ticket and everything, so I don't have, you know, I know where everything is. I know where I'm going. It's better. I'm more prepared after I learned from last time. That when you travel alone, it's hard. And the guy looked at me. I don't know where you're going. And this time also, because I got a ticket, it was for Washington, but it was Baltimore. And she says, where are you going? I said, I'm going to Washington. I said, Washington? I said, yeah, Washington, you know. 6:25, she said, no, you're going to Baltimore. I said, oh, yeah, Baltimore. So now, here we go again. Okay, so...
We want to thank you so much.
Okay.